Hello and welcome to this podcast discussion on a wealth manager's view on the paradox of choice that is powered by PSG Wealth. Now, in this episode, we're going to be exploring the valuable perspectives of wealth managers as they navigate the evolving demands of today's investment landscape, from juggling cutting-edge innovation with time-tested traditions to integrating global strategies within the realities of South Africa's unique regulatory and market environment. The role of the wealth manager is more complex and more critical than ever. So join us as we unpack how professionals in the industry are adapting, the challenges they face, and what it takes to deliver both performance and a personal connection in an increasingly digital world. My name is Bulio Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and I'll be your host for what looks to be a great conversation. And joining me is Adrian Pask, who is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Adrian, greetings to you today.
Hi, Madiova. Hello to everybody listening.
Adrian, when I see the words paradox of choice, I'm reminded of my days in Economics 101, where we talk about the fact that, too much choice actually leads to, slow decision making and a bunch of confusion sometimes. And I think the example that tends to be given many times to illustrate this is arriving on the home screen of Netflix. So many shows to watch, so little time, and sometimes people get paralyzed trying to decide what they're going to watch. In an investment sense, what are we talking about when we talk about the paradox of choice?
Yeah, I think it's something very similar, but I think, unfortunately, it's a bit more dangerous than the Netflix example. So it's good that we talk about it. I think what's happening in the financial services sector, and obviously in the US it's been happening for a while, but it's also now quite prevalent in South Africa, is that because the financial sector is one of the few sectors in the country that's really doing quite well, services more broadly, but the financial sector is very healthy, but it's increasingly competitive out there at the same time. And naturally, all these participants in the markets have to develop new products to stay competitive, try and stay ahead of the curve, to try and entice new clients and investors to partake in whatever they have to offer. But the problem is not all these new offerings and products and things necessarily add value at the end of the day. So at a certain point, the additional value add from adding an additional product actually starts to reduce productivity, sort of like the marginal utility argument that we heard of in economics. Once you've gone over that threshold, it adds complexity to your life. You no longer can just easily make a decision. You've got to not do extensive research to try and find out what is good and what is bad. So choice is good, but at a point, it goes too far. And I think a really important part, especially in the financial services sector, is because it's becoming increasingly competitive on the part of product designers and architects, I think there's more and more risk being taken to ultimately offer clients and entice them more into things that look interesting. And there's different examples of this, not always just product designers per se. If we think about cryptocurrency, it wasn't designed inside an investment bank or anything like that, for example. But there are cases where these new things are quite risky in nature. And it's complicated for investors to really think about, is it a good or a bad thing? Because on the one hand, it's looking enticing. They generally like more choice. But so I think investors typically fail to see that these extra things that are out there don't necessarily serve you well over the long term. So now the trick is to find out, well, where is that point and who can help distinguish the good from the bad and give me something that will ultimately help me achieve what I want to achieve beyond just giving me a product.
As you're talking, one of the things that strikes me about this is the fact that we often hear some conflicting messages sometimes. Some people will say that, competition in the market is a good thing because it benefits, those of us that are consuming a particular good, or in this particular, sense, a service, specifically investment services. At the same time, a lot of people tend to work hard to be able to have, that choice so that they don't feel like they are, can I say, constrained or held to ransom by only having, by being cornered by having that one choice. So when is it, I guess, beneficial for a person to actually, when is it actually beneficial, you know, to have choice actually working in one's favor? And when it can it actually end up doing more harm than good?
In my opinion, I think each situation is somewhat unique in each industry, and even within a retail or fast-moving consumer goods space, even within those, each product will have different levels. But I think the commonality across product sets and industries is once you start to push at risk boundaries, at points where clients or consumers no longer understand what the risks are or no longer understand the benefits and disadvantages from what they are consuming or using. If there are elements of that starting to come into play on a large scale, then I think beyond that point of, you know, the optimal point of having good choice without increasing risk or other things, where we see clear signs of that is where you see products fall over or things start to introduce risk. People aren't achieving their goals. We see large-scale losses, clients or people being defrauded, those kind of things. And I guess the micro argument that some of those things will always be around, but there's definitely an escalation of things out there at the moment. I think it's incredibly difficult for investors to be really aware of the risks of some of the things that are currently made available under the pretense of this is a wide variety of things that we can offer you. But is that really necessarily a good thing? I mean, even with us, we also have a wide variety of products available. But the important thing for us is we tie each product back to a very specific goal in a financial plan. And I think if you don't have that link, you start to lose sight of what the client actually needs to achieve. It becomes more of a product thing alone.
No, it makes sense when you put it like that. I'm reminded of, I guess, a contrast between the world's two biggest smartphone makers when it comes to products and choice. Apple in each year, 3 to 4, and that's it. You know, for the year, this is all you're going to get from them. Whereas Samsung, on the other hand, will have phones across broad ranges and broad price points, you know, so that they can attack, you know, all of these different price points and find a person where they are. So with all of that in mind, then, you know, capital markets are awash with the capital risk appetite rising more and complex products on offer. How does all of this that you're describing impact investors that are trying to plan for the long term?
I think those things are, in some cases, very much a distraction. If we see a lot of new product out in the market that we think are in some way perhaps more risky than what clients believe, yet they ask for these things, and we're concerned about the product's ability to meet long-term goal, or view them as somewhat being compromised of specific outcomes. So maybe to give a practical example, if you design a plan, it's almost you approach it like an actuary. You've got to sit with a client and determine what his needs will be over the long term, including his financial demands in terms of how much money he would need given his expenses at a very elementary level. If you then need to make sure that the assets you have needs to grow at a certain pace to achieve that goal, you need to be quite sure that whatever you put behind the plan to deliver that type of return is going to get there. Otherwise, there's going to be a massive hole in the client's plan and he won't be able to keep up the living standards that he had in mind. So for us, with that in mind, how do you put something like a cryptocurrency in a client's plan? If you've got very little forecasting ability, it's not to say that the cryptocurrency will collapse. We don't know, but that's the risk. It might be very successful. What if it is a fad? What if it passes through and it's something that doesn't generate what you hope to generate? It doesn't mean you need to build ultra-conservative plans just because you can only use predictable asset classes. People sometimes forget that even equities as a growth engine in a portfolio, and we've spoken about this many times before, equities is actually quite a predictable asset class over the long term if you use it correctly. Over the long term, equities will typically yield you inflation plus 6 or 7%. Quite happy to incorporate the element of that in a portfolio and rely on the asset class to generate that long-term return. Cryptocurrencies, you could give it how much time do you need in order to get that forecasting comfort that it will generate X return? There is no time horizon that we can reliably use to say, you know what, Bitcoin is going to generate X return over 20 years. It hasn't been tested from that perspective. So I think that's really, really important, the way that we think about the forecasting risk that's inherent.
I like the fact that you are talking, you gave the example of something like crypto, Adrian, because that's definitely an asset class that has had a lot of noise around it over the last decade, and over the last maybe couple of years, we've started seeing an embracing of that class by your more formal institutions and mainstream investors, and we have started seeing various products coming up around crypto, whether we're talking about ETFs, you know, or other things that are there. So it's certainly a good example of, I guess, something that has a lot of noise around it, and people being sucked into, you know, some into that. I'm just going to call it a vortex, you know, to, and maybe feeling some pressure to say, fine, we need to have something here so that we can remain competitive and all of that. But from a PSG point of view, how do you make sure that you are helping to cut out some of that noise for your customers? I think you had already started alluding to some of that in terms of how you sit down with an actuary and that type of thing. But how do you navigate that particular conundrum, and how do you actually help clients to stay on track and avoid getting distracted by, you know, all of these seemingly attractive you know, products that are out there?
I think, first of all, our view is very much that we're an advice-led business. So we're not a product house. What we try to deliver is a financial plan and help a client achieve their goals. So if you put that ahead of the product, and that sort of anchors everything in terms of what your value proposition is, then things become a lot easier, because you know what your purpose is and you know what will work for you and for your business and your client and what won't. And I think that's really important. So when people have discussions with their wealth managers, it's really important to get a sense that the person is a financial planner. It's not someone that's just giving you a specific product or something interesting. It's someone that listens to you, understands what your goals are, and then gives you something that will reliably execute on the advice. That's all that a product ultimately needs to do. It's not supposed to excite you. It's supposed to give you a sense of confidence that you will reliably get to your goals. So I think maybe in that context, it's more complicated things maybe, but I mean, we've got very specific risk management plans and risk appetite statements that we've put down. And if there are products that are out there that don't meet those criteria, you know, things that can't be reliably utilized in financial plans, then feel comfortable to say no. Because in that saying no, also lies a lot of peace of mind for the client, that it's a bit of a quality control check, that someone is looking at all these things and saying, no, this is just simply not appropriate. It doesn't necessarily make it a bad product, but it makes it bad for you. It makes it not appropriate for what we are really busy with, it's financial planning. So I think investors need to remind themselves, and people who use wealth management need to remind themselves, that they're paying for a plan and peace of mind, not a product. That will ultimately steer the advice that you're being given. And there are many enticing products out there, but don't let those things distract you. Maybe a real question to the wealth manager is, how sure are you we can reach these goals? What we utilize to implement our plan?
I think at this point, before we end off the discussion, you know, around this paradox of choice, I think it might help if we get into some specifics around what or how you define some of these products that we're talking about, you know, that are making noise in the market. How would you define unreliable outcomes or products when it comes to investing, and what investors should actually be wary of?
You know, I think, I mean, to my mind, something like crypto is the obvious thing. And unfortunately, we do see people more so abroad than in South Africa really use more and more of this into plans. And I think there's a little bit of capitulation there on the part of product providers, where the demand for some of these things are so high and the returns are so enticing depending on when you look at it, I guess. But like I say, that's not something that we think is really acting in the best interest of a client if you want to be a reliable provider of good plans. Other examples, I mean, there's many in the fixed income space or things that are positioned as such with similar risk profiles that aren't necessarily appropriate for clients. I mean, that it's very difficult to, because I cannot say, you know, we sort of drew a line on certain things, on certain structured products, not all necessarily, but on certain structured products, for example. They might seem very appealing because they come with what is marketed as guarantees or these kind of things. But the guarantee is only as good as the person issuing the guarantee. And what happens if that entity fails? So there's an element of forecasting risk there. It's not to say it's necessarily always inappropriate, but now you've got to go look at the balance sheet and make sure that it will be reliable. You need to have some type of risk appetite statement there to say, well, if we think that this provider is maybe not as strong from a creditworthiness point of view, then this is not going to meet our quality control test and we won't go there. I mean, alternatives seem to be a thing that's sort of getting more and more popular, but it's a very, very difficult thing to accurately forecast over the long term. So we've got to be very careful how you include that in plans and to what extent, et cetera. So, I mean, those are some of the more common examples that we see at the moment. You need to have some type of a quality check or a standard to live up to say, if this serves me or serves my plan, or, you know, this is maybe something that compromises my ability to reach my goal.
Maybe just as a quick follow-up, Adrian, do you see some of that, because you mentioned with the example of crypto, you mentioned that that's something that you're sort of seeing more outside of SA. Do you see some of these attitudes or some of these more exotic products creeping into the SA market, or does the general risk averseness of, you know, local investors, I guess, carry through in terms of them at least avoiding or not including some of these things into their offerings? Because I'm sure for the SA investors, one of the issues that's underlying this is that there's a lot of demand for offshore exposure, and in that case, you might find yourself in one of these things. But on the local front, do you see some of those attitudes being pervasive?
There is definitely some of that creeping into the market at the moment. And I think it's unfortunate that we also see some product providers sort of also losing sight of things a little bit. I think, you know, it's fair to say that most businesses are obviously in the business of attracting new clients. But I think that's maybe where, you know, each business needs to have a purpose to live by and a philosophy to live by. It's a firm belief of mine. And that's why for us, if we believe our purpose is providing clients with advice, then that sort of anchors things and gives you a framework or context in terms of what is suitable for you and what is not. Where I think where people become increasingly competitive and want to attract more clients and start to make anything available just to attract more clients without necessarily thinking of, but you're now standing in for this product, you're endorsing this product. I think that kind of behavior we should be very careful of. Obviously, be fortunate in South Africa, we've got many very good financial planners and we've got very good financial planning organization. But I think we do see elements of this creeping into the industry, which I think is concerning.
All right. I think on the last point, what are some of the practical steps that investors should take when they're working with their wealth managers to make sure that their plans are on track and truly tailored to their needs? I understand that the difficulty there is the fact that one person tends to be an expert, whereas the other person is at a bit of a deficit when it comes to, you know, information or understanding how some of these products work. But to whatever extent they can, what can investors actually do to make sure that, you know, things stay on track?
You know, I think when you speak to a wealth manager, and the wealth manager, I think this is one of the ironies in our industry, is that in some way, a wealth manager that can accommodate any type of investment or product is somehow seen as superior. where a person who says, no, this is not suitable, might be seen as someone that's more less able in some way. But I think it's really important to listen to a person that says, this is not suitable for you, and try to get that understanding. You know, our business, like you mentioned, there's a bit of a knowledge gap. So at some point, trust becomes quite important. And I think it's actually when people say, you know what, you need to trust me. I'm trying to give you the best possible advice, the best possible route. I think you might be making a mistake. And this applies to all the wealth management businesses out there. I've got no illusion that everybody faces this conundrum at a point where a client just refuses to listen at a point. But I think listen to your wealth manager when they say, this might not be suitable. You know, there are cases when clients absolutely insist on using something in a portfolio, and the hard job is to explain to them that this is not suitable. So I mean, I think my practical advice for guys using wealth managers and who are looking at these products is, welcome to discuss it with a wealth manager at any point in time. I think that's healthy. But when the advice is, maybe this is not suitable for you, more often than not, that's pretty good advice. So maybe take that seriously. And when choosing a wealth manager, make sure that they have some quality checks in place in terms of what they provide to you, and that there's a model for performing quality screens on products that will meet client requirements specifically. It's not just a product house that facilitate any request for any product. That's not giving financial advice. And like I said, remember, you're paying for a plan and peace of mind, not a product. And that's ultimately what you should be getting.
On that note, that's how we end off today's discussion. The big theme being the fact that as someone who's in the market, as someone who's investing, what is being actually paid for, you know, is peace of mind on the financial front as opposed to products. Just talking about a paradox of choice in the market for investment products. Adrian just giving us a sense to say right now we are faced with the market where in order to either attract or to retain clients, you know, a lot of advisors and, you know, wealth managers and, you know, different types of companies are offering various products. And, you know, those products may or may not be the best, you know, for your portfolio. And a lot of it has to do with just being able to be seen, you know, to have a lot of different offerings. But Adrian, you know, just cautioning to say that, yes, you can have an institution that has a lot of products, but at the end of the day, what needs to be ensured is your financial, you know, is your financial well-being, your financial peace of mind, as opposed to the products themselves. Talking about some of the ways that products have introduced a lot of noise into the market, making it a little bit harder for people to make decisions. Also talking about ways in which people can actually go about trying to cut out some of the noise, and also how PSG themselves have gone about in trying to help their customers when it comes to making the best financial decision as opposed to, you know, just getting them into products. When it comes to the products themselves, he highlights the likes of crypto, and he was talking about the fact that in offshore markets particularly, they are seeing a huge rise in these types of products because there's so much demand for it. And he was just saying that it is alarming to see that some of those attitudes are also creeping in to the SA market. Ending off, obviously, talking about ways in which investors can actually work to make sure that in working with their investment and wealth managers, they can make sure that their plans are on track and truly tailored to their needs. So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one. Thank you so much. We were in discussion with Adrian Parsky, is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. I've been your host, Mudiwa Kabaza, of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on Spotify, Player.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.